SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at Fairgrounds. We're about 20 minutes in, give or take. Hour three, and Jay Pribman. I was scurrying Jay to see how Go Kings Go did last night.
They went. They blew a 3-2 lead late in the regulation, got tied by Vancouver, and then lost in a shootout as the season of misery continued.
Well, you've got the memories of cup glory that can hold you over until the next round of Go Kings Go glory. There you go.
this is true. I never thought they'd win one cup, let alone two. So I'll have to hold on to that.
I did. You know, I saw a hat actually. I was thumbing through whatever, and you know, you get ads and everything now, and I saw a very cool purple and yellow throwback Kings hat with the crown on it. I thought that might look good on Jay Pribman.
I wish they still had those jerseys. I love the original jerseys.
That was a classic.
Jack Kent Cook.
Jack Kent Cook was the original owner?
Yes.
I didn't know that. How about that?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Interesting.
He built a fabulous forum.
And then sold to McNeil?
The official colors were Forum Gold. He called the colors Forum Gold, not yellow. Forum Gold with blue trim. Even though, like, royalty is purple, and that color is obviously purple, he called it blue trim. He was a very eccentric person, and I know that because I actually, at one point in my career, worked for him because he purchased the LA Daily News while I was still working there.
There was one year he had a horse in the
Kentucky Derby that Jay Robbins traded. I'm not making the story up. He called the office. I was at the Derby. He called the office. He had this very high-pitched, whiny sort of voice, and he got the sports editor, and he's like, "Who did Jay Pribman pick in the Derby?" And my editor was afraid to tell him that, like, you know, I did a graded handicap for the Derby. I picked his horse 12th. But he told him, and I was still employed when I got home, so yay.
That is too funny. I love it. I love it. Jack brushes with Jack. And then he sold to Bruce McNall?
I'm trying to think if he sold directly to McNall or if there was somebody in between. That I don't remember.
Interesting.
I think that's true, but I don't recall right now. Jack Kent Cook was the original. He was the original owner of the King.
You never know what fascinating sidebar is going to pop up on this show.
And the whole reason we're talking about this, of course, Steve, for all our radio listeners, our racing listeners, is because Jack Kent Cook at one point owned Elmendorf Farm. So that's how we're going to justify this detour.
And as Hammer just said, Justify entered a year ago today.
Yes. No.
To bring it back full circle. Jay, before we talk Derby Watch and everything went on last week and coming up, let's get to the Hall of Fame announcement yesterday. As I was getting off the air, the news broke on the 9 finalists, and, you know, you're part of the system, and then you report on it. Talk about who the voters are going to consider and who you think deserves.
Well, there's 9 finalists this year. 5 horses, they being Royal Delta, Rags to Riches, Blind Luck, Geoponte, and Hava de Grace. 3 trainers, Mark Cassie, David Whiteley, and Christophe Clement, and 1 jockey, Craig Perrett. And the way the system works is there's a nominating committee of 16 people. I'm one of the 16. And we consider that this year there were 93 names that were submitted to us for consideration, and it's all pooled, jockey sources and trainers. And of the 16 of us on the committee, after we look at all the information, we we vote on who we think should advance to the final ballot, and there needs to be support from 11 of the 16 members for an entity to get to the final ballot. So this year, of all the ones that were considered, there were 9 who cleared that bar, and most of the ones that are on the list I've voted for. There's a couple on there I didn't vote for, and there's a couple I voted for who didn't make the cut, like Kona Gold, who it just makes me crazy that he's can't even get on the ballot, because I think that horse has had a Hall of Fame career. But anyway, I'll digress. Hopefully at some point my fellow nominated committee members will agree with myself and a few others who spoke on his behalf during our conference call. But of the ones that are on the ballot this year, as you know, I've said for years, I think Craig Perrett belongs, and I really hope that he finally gets over the hump. I can't believe that the people who are part of the larger voting group have not seen in the past his credentials as worthy of being in the Hall of Fame, but I just don't know what they're looking at. Royal Delta, to me, is a complete slam dunk, as I wrote in my story yesterday. When you win 3 straight championships at ages 3, 4, and 5, that's a Hall of Fame career. And one of the things I think people need to, or at least I believe, the Hall of Fame is supposed to reward a great career as opposed to a great achievement. And I think Royal Delta measures up in that regard, because she had a great career. 2-time Breeders' Cup winner, 3-time champion. That belongs in the Hall of Fame, not somebody who did, had a brief shining moment. That's the way I look at it.
And I agree. And in fact, yesterday, after I got off the air, Andy Serling and I were talking, and Andy was, Andy's voting this year actually for the first time. And, he actually.
Who let him in?
he prompted a very intelligent back and forth about the difference between career achievement and unique, specific flashes of brilliance and historic footnotes. And obviously, this is where I'm heading is rags to riches. Who people, when they hear the name, think about the Belmont win and put it in the 100-year context all the way back to Tanya. And the body of work really it was not a Hall of Fame body of work.
I mean, she had a great year or great spring actually, and she did pull off an unprecedented feat of winning the Kentucky Oaks and the Belmont Stakes, and in the process of beating the Belmont, she beat Curlin, who had just won the Preakness, and went on to be not only Horse of the Year that year, but the following year as well, and is already in the Hall of Fame. So what she did in that amount of time was pretty special. The question you have to ask yourself is that a great achievement or a great career? And I'm very sympathetic to the argument that Andy makes in that regard. And I think there's a lot of emotion involved with rags to riches because it was a great, the performance was terrific, stumbling at the start and still beating a horse who, we now know was one of the best horses we've seen in the last 25 years in Curlin. So that was an incredible performance on her part. But is that, plus the what else she did that spring, is that enough to say you're an all-time great? To me she's a borderline candidate. She wouldn't be the worst one to go in, but there's to me better ones out there. And again, if you look at I'll bring it back to Kona Gold. I think those who would support rags to riches over Kona Gold would be. He didn't win a classic. He was, quote-unquote, just a sprinter, which is something I've gotten pushback on in the past, less so recently on our conference calls. But to me, running in 5 straight Breeders' Cup sprints, being a champion, setting track records in multiple races, and winning races that, because of his wins, caused the races that he won to end up getting elevated. Like the Bing Crosby was a grade two when he won it. Because of him, it ended up being a grade one. So he's almost penalized for not winning enough grade ones when, in fact, what he did was help elevate that race to grade one because of how good he was. So that's the way I look at it, you know, an overall body of work. So we'll see what the voters think this year.
What's your gut sense on blind luck? And I don't know if you if you just happened to notice yet, or you saw it, you know, as part of these evaluations. I just seeing it for the first time and noticing it. They both went 12 for 22.
Yeah, it's incredible, right? Yeah, I mean, she and Royal Delta had the exact same win percentage. You know, I thought Blind Luck had a terrific career. I think she's right. You know, she's a she has gotten my support, and I think she will get my support. You know, I like horses that stick around and do a lot. I mean, to me, she's a much better candidate than Havre de Grace in terms of a Hall of Famer. So Havre de Grace was a horse of the year, but she had really one good year. And yeah, she beat the boys in the Woodward, but again, to me, it's the totality of your whole time on the racetrack. And I, you know, Royal Delta is a far better candidate to me, by my way of looking at things, than Havre de Grace.
Well,
but like
what's
I said, there's, sorry?
Yeah, I was just going to say that the problem, one problem is going to end up being, there's going to end up being a Havre de Grace versus Blind Luck Donnybrook, because people are going to say, oh, Havre de Grace beat her twice, and we're going to hear that as part of the argument, because I'm actually, Blind Luck is a filly that and mare that won me over, and I mean, I remember seeing her leading up to the Oaks, Jay, and she looked like something that you see in the park on Sundays with children on her.
Yeah, she wasn't very big, was she?
Not only was she not big, she had blotches left from skin disease as a 2-year-old, and I she just looked like I just thought, how can this horse win the Oaks? And I don't even want to talk about the beat that Evening Jewel takes in that Oaks, because Gary Young is listening and he'll jump off a roof, but
yeah, that was a tough one for Muggs.
Well, she won me over. She was she was tough as nails, and I'm inclined to vote for her.
Very good. Yeah, no, I mean, she shipped all over the racetrack, and again, she won grade one races at ages 2, 3, and 4. That's a strong body of work. It's not just sort of a 4 or 5 months of brilliance.
You know, I'm just looking at this. I had forgotten that she debuted in a 40 claimer.
Yeah, yeah, she was, and then they privately purchased her. She was kind of like Hollendorfer's version of what Stellar Wind was to for Sadler, a horse that was, when Stellar Wind came out of the Mid-Atlantic region and Blind Luck South Florida, but the horse that they pounced on after a race or two and then went on to be a champion and multiple grade one winner.
What do we do about what are we going to do about Gio Ponti, who to me is a really nice horse, but I don't know. I don't know.
You know, I like that he was, again, he's another horse who stuck around a long time, which I really like. He won 7 grade one races. He was a 3-time champion, and he acted on 2 surfaces. I mean, he ran well on synthetic as well as on dirt. One thing that helps him in terms of the way his resume is presented is that he won an Eclipse. He won Eclipse Awards as both champion turf horse and champion older male back when grass horses could win both of those divisions, and that rule has changed. There's now a specificity where it's called older dirt male or older dirt female, and it's older turf male and older turf female, so that you don't have the likes of Gio Ponti or Wise Dan winning older male when they have a turf centered career or campaign is the word I was searching for. I think he's worthy of consideration. I'm like you. I'm not quite sure he did enough, but I like rewarding horses who had long, sustained careers. And, you know, he was one of them. But again, is the Hall of Fame for the very good or the great? And that's where you have to make the hard call on Gio Ponti.
Well, and,
but he was certainly very good.
Yeah.
Was he great?
Well, and then you mentioned the parrot situation, and I suppose it should help his cause that he'll be the only jock up for consideration. And I hope those that are voting that either didn't see him ride or don't understand the era he rode in, and you know the way he was employed as the money rider of his era, and. I just hope that we can get Craig Perrett over the threshold.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, he followed, as you say, like the money rider. He was that era's Don Pierce from an earlier iteration, or from a more recent iteration, Mike Smith. You know, the guy who late in his career was the go-to guy for the big races because he just was cool as ice and you could really count on him. And, you know, his career began before the Eclipse Award era, but had the Eclipse Awards been in existence in 1967 when he was an apprentice, he would have had another Eclipse Award because he was far and away the leading money-winning apprentice that year. But he doesn't have an Eclipse Award to show for his champion apprentice jockey because the Eclipse Awards didn't start until 1971. He did go on to win an Eclipse Award in 1990, the year that he won the Derby on Unbridled. But he's another one. A sustained, terrific career. He rode during a Breeders' Cup era when it was just a one-day event, so it's not like he was able to rack up more. Breeders' Cup riders have twice as many opportunities now than a guy like he did back in the years that he was still riding. And he still won four Breeders' Cup races, including the sprint on Safely Kept. And the sustained excellence of his career, to me, should put him in, and it's beyond overdue for him to get in. And the way, by the way, Steve, the way, just for the listeners to know, the way the voting works now, I mean, there's nine entities on the ballot, and in theory, they all could go in. It's a straight up and down vote now, which I'm really glad they did. In the past, they had a rule where just the top four got in, and even if somebody got enough votes, you're supposed to get 50% or more to get in. That's the way the rule is. But in the past, if there had been, let's say, five entities who got 50% plus one, only the top four would get in. To me, that's wrong. And I'm really glad the Hall of Fame made the change before last year, and it's still in effect this year, that it's just a straight up and down vote. Either you're good enough to get in or you're not. You shouldn't have to be competing against whoever's on the ballot the same year as you. That's I mean, they don't do that in any other sport. It's not like, well, we can't let more than five baseball players in this year because we've already got four, so too bad, Pedro Martinez or whatever, you know.
I know. All right. Well, we'll put it in the hands of the voters. Let's get to Derby Watch and hope everybody has had a chance to get to DRF.com and as a giant crow just is ready to come into the press box and have a donut.
No way to speak of Andy Serling. No way to, really. Oh, wait, he's a giant. So.
But oh boy, that's going to light it up. Jay, Derby Watch is off and running. And
we can't because we love.
Exactly. Some thoughts about what happened last week, and you know, we talked to Kathleen O'Connell. Excited for Kathleen, she believed in well defined and got a defining win.
Yeah, I mean, I have an immense amount of respect for her. I think she's one of the best trainers in the country. She does a phenomenal job every year, and you know, well defined is a horse that actually kind of owes me money because I gambled on him his previous race in the Mucho Macho Man, and that didn't turn out the way I had hoped. But he, to me, seems like he's the kind of horse that when he gets loose on the lead, he's really good. And if somebody goes with him early, he's not very good. And he got an optimum type of trip last week, and he took advantage of it, and he led from start to finish unfortunately, the runner-up got hurt in the race, and nobody else really ran. I mean, the rest were well back. And I just need to see well-defined turn in a performance like that when he's got some pressure, which is going to happen, and it's happened in previous races, like the Breeders' Cup. Again, it figures to happen again in the Tampa Bay Derby, or if he gets through that, something like the Bluegrass. That to me is one of the things that he needs to show that he can do. He has yet to do that, but he certainly ran a terrific race, and if he can spring clear of everybody early, he gets very, very brave.
Are you of the camp to keep monitoring So Alive, who was way back early and looked like a horse that might appreciate the mile and an eighth and beyond?
You know, it's going to take him a while to catch up to those horses going a mile and an eighth and beyond. He's just a little too slow for my taste at this point. But that's why, you know, there's still 2.5 months till the Kentucky Derby. Horses can definitely make major leaps forward. But as of today, I need to see more from him.
Well, and let's actually touch on some of the participants in the list of 20, and you seem impressed with the Dreammaker, and I brought Dreammaker up with Marcus Hirsch, a colleague, and also with Frank McGoey earlier, and with Cassie as well over the weekend. Looks like he's poised to make an impact.
I mean, we liked his race, but you know, he of the top 20, he was number, you know, he was about the 18th, 19th, or 20th horse that we ended up deciding we liked. I mean, what we do is we come up with our list of 20, and then they get ranked in the order of Mike's future line towards the race. It's basically, in theory, you're looking at the 20 horses as though, all right, that's the starting field. What price would they be if the race was run today? That's how we end up doing it. So, yeah, I mean, we like Dreammaker's race. It was a good race. The Fig was only average. It was 89. And I'm looking forward to seeing him run against better competition in his next start, and then we'll see really what he's made of. He's supposed to go to the Tampa Bay Derby next, so he'll run against well-defined and horses of that ilk, and there's a chance Signal Man could show up in that race if he doesn't go in the Fountain of Youth. So, yeah, he made our top 20, but he's not. It's not like he's number one with a bullet.
There's a number of horses that you've got included, you know, that we're waiting to see. We'll obviously we'll talk about War of Will and Owendale and the Risen Star horses momentarily. But you know, you've got quite a few that we're going to be coming out here in coming weeks. You know, so you're kind of waiting and watching to some degree with the Signalmans and the Muchos you know, the types of that ilk.
Exactly. I mean, there's still horses that are coming off of layoffs that we need to see how they come back. And we've got races that there's, you know, Instagram would fall into that group as well. So there's certainly the potential for quite a bit of change to the list over coming weeks, as always.
Absolutely.
But there's definitely, as you put it, a number of horses. You know, and that even goes for the top two we've got on our list. Neither of them have run yet at three. They're only going to have two preps and Game Winner and Improbable.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
They need to come back. They need to show us that they've come back as good as they left. So there's some horses that are running already and are on the list, and a few that are going to be running this weekend, and then there's a number that have yet to make their three-year-old debuts and are coming off either very extended layoffs like Mucho or Instagram, or shorter ones but still significant ones like Game Winner and Improbable.
Well, that brings us to the Risen Star, and what a fun cast we ended up with in here. War of Will outposted, and then quite a few horses out of the LeCompte and other endeavors trying graded stake for the first time. This has got really a fun look about it tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a good race. War of Will's obviously come on since moving to the dirt, I don't mind the outside draw. He was wide last time, and it didn't bother him, and he's out. He can just stay out of trouble out where he is. So it's not a concern to me where he's drawn. And obviously he gets a little bit of help with the defection of Kingley from the race. His bad draw caused him to get rerouted actually to the El Camino Real Derby tomorrow at Golden Gate. One of the horses in this race who's on our list, who I'm really eager to see run, is Owendale. He just seems to me like he's progressing. He's obviously in a top barn with Brad Cox, and he made our Derby watch list, and now we'll see if that was justified. But I think he's, for me, he's the next best horse going in behind War of Will.
Anybody else? Who else you think has a potential to step forward?
Well, I mean, I didn't think Hog Creek Hustle ran that bad last time. He was certainly running on at the end of the race. He was clearly inferior on the day to War of Will, but it wasn't a bad performance. I know Country House is going to get a lot of support, but his fig was just not Derby worthy, and that's why he's not in our top 20 right now, even though he's got there's a lot of buzz about him, and certainly can't knock the barn that he comes from. Bill Mott's turned into a Derby prep trainer this year with Mucho and Hidden Scroll and Country House. He's got a few percolating out there, so I'm interested to seeing if our opinion of Country House is accurate or not. Right now, we have him outside the top 20, and tomorrow he will either do enough to cause him to move on to the list or show that he still is on the outside looking in our evaluation.
Very good. Well, any you mentioned the El Camino Real. There's also the Battaglia, and you got the Miracle Wood toward the Tessio, and of course both of the Stronach racetracks, Laurel leading into the Tessio, and the El Camino offering slots in the Preakness. So these are all events worth watching. Kingley diverted to the El Camino. Any thoughts on the Golden Gate affair?
Actually, there's a horse up there who's really looked like a world beater in this couple of synthetic races, and it's the favorite, or the second choice, I guess, on the morning line, Kingley's favorite. But another twist of fate just looks to me like he's got the home court advantage. He's won very nicely in his couple of races on that surface there, and I think he's absolutely the horse that to beat. I prefer him to Kingley.
Well, and Hammer was on him, I think, as well. So another twist of fate. Love it. With Jay, appreciate it. And you're going to start to get in gear, little travel upcoming?
Yeah, the Fountain of Youth will be the next trip. That's coming up a really good race this year. So I'm looking forward to getting back down to South Florida for that. And then the next one after that would be the Louisiana Derby. Try and get to the different regions. It doesn't look like I'm going to get to Oakland this year, but I like to be able to get to South Florida and New Orleans to see the horsemen, see the horses. It really it helps in the reporting process to be on site and to see things and be able to pass that on to the readers.
Jay Pribman, everybody, DRF Pribman, and the Derby Watch, and keep a watch out for changes the coming week. And Jay, I appreciate it, the insight toward the Hall of Fame voting as well.
Thank you very much,
Jay Pribman, folks. And we even got a little history lesson about the Kings and the Forum and Jack Kent Cook. We're going to stay right here because we got 10, 11 minutes, 12 minutes, we got James Scully standing by, ready for us. And we always, every trip, this being our second to New Orleans, we get a visit in with Chad Schexnader as well, the ubiquitous Chad's Schexnader. Good morning.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm good. It's good to see you, Scully.
Hey, good to see you, Steve. Glad to be down here.
And this is already what? This is your second run already, right?
Yeah, Bill was down here for LeCompte and here for the Risen Star this weekend. What a dynamite field for both Ed and Rachel Alexander.
And I've just realized Ed went to Oaklawn for opening.
Right, and Vance is going Monday for the Southwest.
Well, and since the Southwest quickly comes up, I'll note that those that are looking to play back the Naira Cross Country Pick 5, it's actually going to be on Monday. And so we won't have the races until they draw the Monday cards today.
Right.
But I went to look for it this morning to see if it was Saturday, and I see that it's Monday. And also those that have been felling for the Saratoga schedule, it's been released. It's been released. There's going to be a Saratoga season. Unbelievable. Sanity. Let's get to this because there's a lot to look at. James, we'll start with you. We'll work back and we'll ping pong with Chad. And let's start with the finale and this fascinating Risen Star.
Yeah, fascinating Risen Star. I really was impressed by War of Will in the LeCompte, Steve. I thought he was much the best that day. I thought that, you know, if Tyler wanted to, he could have gone right to the lead and won the race on the front end. And, you know, the horse was a little headstrong early, but he settled nicely, I thought, on the back stretch and won with, you know, with plenty in reserve, seemingly. And I think he has another move forward in him. I don't know about, you know, mile and a quarter and, you know, down the stretch this spring, but I think he's got the goods to win the Risen Star tomorrow.
And I kind of agree that when it comes to Cassie, and he didn't blink an eye when he drew this post.
Which is interesting because, you know, if you like War Will, you really wanted some of that Baffert money to be in the pool, I guess, with Kingly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was talking with James a little while ago, and here's a question for you, Steve. I don't know if you saw. When's the last time a Risen Star winner won from the 10-hole out?
Ooh, that's fun.
2007 Notional for Doug O'Neill.
Notional was one of my I loved Notional.
He won from out
wow.
there, but they've had a bunch of horses that 12-13 range hit the board. None of them really win. It's just a tough thing to do, and he can overcome it. I mean, he's obviously very talented, but for that price, posted that far out, I've just seen too many races here to really put a lot of stock in him. You know, obviously you got to put him on your ticket, like Marcus said, as maybe a B play or whatever. But you know, just seen so many races where those horses just find trouble.
Well, and the beauty, though, is he can, and Gaffalione's very good at this, he can keep him, I think, kind of out of trouble. I mean, especially because there's not a lot of forward-going speed in between him and Maniwa. And if Maniwa's the target heading into the turn, I think he can pretty much set up shop, you know, the 2.5 path, 3 path, and then on the once they get to the backstretch, if he wants to draft in a little bit, we'll see what, you know, see where Maniwa is at that point and what, you know, Channing Hill is going to do for father-in-law Wayne Catalano, and we'll go from there. All right, so if we, I think we all recognize that we're going to use War of Will in you know, in all the multis. Who else? Who wants to be? Who else has to be considered? You know, and the prices are going to be there no matter who you like.
I think it's a tough task making a morning line. I don't want to criticize that, but I think Country House is going to be the second choice in the wagering. Plus Caparfait is going to be the third choice. Both those horses are suitable, like, alternatives in my estimation. The horse that intrigues me, though, is Owendale. And like I said, you know, he's the 6-1 second choice on the morning line, but I think he'll be probably like the fourth choice. A little bit of the, a lot of these Into Mischiefs you see, Steve, are real precocious, the good ones from the get-go. Owendale's got a little different profile where he wasn't that precocious, was just a horse, it seemed like, for a while. But I think he's really turned the corner in those last two starts for Brad Cox. Interesting to see that Bernardini on the dam side. That's some stamina there. And if he continues to move forward off that race, I look for him to be in the top three.
No, I can't argue.
Owendale's a hunch play for me. My son's name Owen. I put him. I got him at 99-1 in the futures pool last week.
How
on Twinspire. I might be the
awesome.
Only bet in that pool because he's 99-1.
Yeah.
But I've seen Owendale, and I told you this the week before the LeCompte. I said the winner of the Risen Star could be in this allowance race.
That's right. That's right. You did say that.
And it was Owendale.
You did say
so,
that.
So, you know, I've been on the horse for a little while now. I like that horse. And, you know, I spent some time with Brett Calhoun this week, too, back there. And be careful with Mr. Money. You know, he's high on this horse. He really, really wanted to be in a LeCompte. I mean,
right.
But this horse is training really, really, really well over this track, and I think at a price, you know, he could be one to look at, too. Don't leave him out.
Yeah, and I'll just mention with that what Owen said, that allowance race, to me, like a Frolic Moore is a kind of horse that I'll look to use underneath. I'm betting like the favorite in here, War of Will. Frolic Moore, I thought, ran a good second that day. I think he's a colt's got a little bit of upside for Dallas Sturt. And, you know, he's more than ready, but a mile 16th won't be any problem for him tomorrow. So he's like one I'd be looking to include in the exotics.
Well, and ran a terrific race, the same kind of race actually that Hot Creek Hustle ran in the LeCompte.
Yeah, and that horse that he beat two back when he broke his maiden, Market King, you know, he came back and won for the coach at Oaklawn Park by open lens last weekend.
Oh, that's so. Right. That's right. I saw that maiden chart earlier this morning when I was going through stuff. The terrific finish to the outstanding card. The Rachel Alexandra, of course, we lost the American Pharoah sister. It seems like suddenly the Mojo Philly is positive spirit that everybody has landed on.
Well, I definitely think positive spirit is, I mean, to me, she looks like it was an improving type last fall. Expect her to be a good three-year-old. I went back and saw her yesterday. She's gigantic. I mean, enormous filly, really well-built looking individual. But the horse that intrigues me is that Multabella. I really like the step forward she made last time in that Gasparilla for Ian Wilkes. Don't think the stretch out to two turns, I mean, will be any problem for her. And it looks like to me, you know, she's going to have an opportunity to save ground from that inside post. Could be a little bit of speed in this race. And, you know, she's a little bit intriguing to me at 10-1. I'm going to go with pick her on top.
I just wonder, you know, the dam that Dr. Zick for Joan Scott was a very good 7/8 horse. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I had this conversation a little bit with Marcus and with Frank.
I don't think Need Supervision did anything wrong. I mean, she won last out. She's got the race over the track. I thought that was a really, really good effort by her. She gets another shot at it here. You know, the shippers here, where's the Brad Cox filly? Why is there no Brad Cox filly in this race? Oh, amazing. Huh? He usually has these 3-0 fillies geared up for here. But, you know, Multabella, I think, shipping in. You know, you got that going. You got Positive Spirit, too. She's one I'm going to take a second look at to put in the ticket as well. But I like Need Supervision here to repeat.
And I will mention Oxy Lady. I don't know if she'll be good enough to win, but she's the kind of filly that could get the right setup, might be one to look at for the top three.
Well, and you know, from all that, the horse that seemingly is being kind of dismissed is Serengeti Empress. And if she's made
Where's your boy Amos? He's usually up here. If he's disappeared and he don't want no part of the mic, then he might not be live this week. I don't know. he usually wants to talk about these horses and these long shots.
Yeah, that filly only has three works in her. That's a little I thought that was surprising that she, you know, hadn't been training longer before this race.
And I think Marcus said that they were doing some Florida, you know, did some the road work down in Florida before they came up, waiting for the Fairgrounds Oaks, and this is, you know, strictly a place to get started, and there is plenty of pace pressure. Let's quickly hit the Fairgrounds handicap. We'll do a yes or no. Synchrony, win or
yes.
Lose?
Yeah, Synchrony. I think she's winner. I think he's winner.
I'm taking Combatant. I'm going to go Combatant, Synchrony. They're my top two. I think Combatant has got a real potential for Asmussen. Both races on firm ground, outstanding. That was a good race last time on the Mathis Brothers Mile at Santa Anita.
No quip in the mineshaft, but you do have Lone Sailor and Flame Away making their four-year-old debuts against an interesting collection. Horses like Harlan Punch and Crew Chief and Silver Dust. What are we doing in here, James?
I like Silver Dust. I thought he went. I thought he blew that turn into that. The first turn, Alvarado had him in a tough spot. If it says five path first turn in the run line, I'm thinking it was more like six or seven wide. It was ridiculous that trip. It was really hit for him. He made a really nice run. Came up a little bit short to Harlan Punch. He's a tappet. It took him about 15 starts to graduate from the non-winners of one other than allowance category, and he has just moved forward since then for Brett Calhoun. Brett Calhoun, 30th trainer ever to win 3,000 races in North America.
How about that?
I'm leaning on Lone Sailor. I think even not even close to 100% right now. He could still win this race. Flame Away, if the track's playing fast and if they soup it up a little bit, Flame Away could freak first start as a 4-year-old. I mean, if he gets loose out there and the track's playing his way, he could keep going. You know, Lone Sailor needs it, you know, kind of his way. I'm still hurting from that nose missed by Noble Indian Louisiana Derby last year. But he's, you know, obviously talented enough to win. Silver Dust, like you said, Brett says he puts it all together in the morning. If the race is at 7:30 in the morning, he'd probably win. But in the afternoons, he's just got to get around there and figure it out. And he hasn't done that yet. But when he does, he's going to pay something.
Let's get a couple of horses. We'll bounce back and forth. That's the pick four. James, anywhere on the card, what do you like?
You know, in race four, that Beau Recall was all out to win that last time. I thought it was very fortunate. I'm a little bit against her in the spot in the Albert Stahl Memorial. I think she could be 4-5, too, off that win. She's 2-1 morning line. I like Cabela. I think that last race, that off turf, she didn't get the best of trips that day. I like the equipment change, putting the blinkers on. She's 3-4 over the fairgrounds turf. And looks like, you know, and ended last year, I thought, with a real good fourth in the Miss Revere.
I'll give you a real bomb. Seventh race, the mile 16th, maiden special weight on the dirt. Neil Howard's 20-1. Bridge Mahan goes on that horse this time around. You might get 20-1. I think the light bulb, you know, talking to some
Parade
people.
Field. To, we talked to Neil that day. I had Neil on. We talked about Parade Field.
Okay, I think that horse last work really was good, and I think Neil's expecting a big effort this time. So at 20-1, you know, that's pretty wide open maiden special weight race there. So maybe take a shot, you know, use that horse at those odds in that race. And the other maiden race in the third, I like the Al Stahl horse, Get the Prize.
Wow.
Mina on.
Wow.
8-1, you're going to get every bit of 8-1, maybe probably a couple ticks higher than that. So.
Well, that race is going to end up being wide open because Frank was on Bourbon Calling and New Frontier at 8-1, and I don't think that Glyshaw and the Iron Horse, second time starter, I think that horse might be sneaky in there. The third should be a absolute riot, and you like Dallas Stewart in the last at Oaklawn tomorrow.
Yep. Dallas Stewart in the last.
Anything else from you? Quick.
The nine horse today, race six at Fairgrounds.
The nine and the sixth at Fairgrounds from Scully. And we'll come back to you Monday for the recap. And we'll see if the winner is here in town, the horseman. Hope that they'll all be around. Certainly, you know, they can fly to the wind. This was really fun, and I appreciate Jad Chexnader, James Scully, Frank McGooey, Marcus Hirsch, Jay Pribman, Hammer, Nick Tamaro, and we'll have your NTAM Game Builder brought to you by the National HBPA tomorrow, and I'll do this card, and we will talk to you Monday. Good luck, everybody.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.